It is hard not to offend people in this age. I'm old enough to have been in school long enough ago that one of the required classes was American civics. But the days of having civil discussions on issues are long gone. Instead of trying to solve the problems our country is facing, it seems that all people want to do is protest and keep other people from doing their jobs. The mainstream news media has abandoned its sacred responsibility to truthfully inform the American people on the issues of today and has instead become the instigator of the latest protest march or occupation of some office that doesn't fit their agenda. Ratings are more important than truthful reporting. This nation was founded on the principle that we, as a nation, would be governed by the laws duly enacted by our elected officials. It seems now that the end justifies the means. If you don't like a law, just ignore it or disobey it. When the penalties for our actions are carried out, we scream bloody murder at the unfairness of it all, or public officials sanction the action. The two major parties have become so corrupt that neither party deserves to be in power. For those on the left who insist that President Trump is not their president, yes, he is. Get over it already. I believe in democracy, and I love my country. But it makes me sad to see it so deeply divided. That divisiveness continues to grow with each passing day. President John F. Kennedy once said, "Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country." Now, more than ever, it is important that country should come first before party. Change is imperative because a united country can do more than a divided country. To be blunt, America has a flawed two-party system. It works against itself. Ever since its beginning, America has been known as a free country, where anyone can start at the bottom and end at the top, even be president of the United States. As a matter of fact, the United States sparked the love of democracy in the modern world. Thus, the following questions need be asked. How has American politics evolved? What is the influence of political parties, bosses, and primaries? Have they strengthened or weakened our system? Political parties have played a crucial role in American society, but they have their downfalls too. In fact, political parties were not included in the Constitution. The Founding Fathers wanted us to be united because a united country can achieve so much more than a divided one. This is clearly evidenced in the preamble of the Constitution, which reads, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." Even George Washington was wary of political parties. He highlighted his concerns in his farewell address when he said, "The alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, which in different ages and countries have perpetrated the most horrible enormities, is itself a frightful despotism." George Washington was right because the American party system has slowly deteriorated over time and turned out to be a faulty structure. America's two-party system is flawed because it impairs the constitutional guarantees of one person, one vote, has a negative impact on the exercise of voting rights, and weakens the major and third parties, and strengthens the influence of others on elections. The Bill of Rights, Constitution, and Declaration of Independence give us basic human rights, like the freedom of speech. Sadly, the American winner-take-all system impairs the constitutional guarantees of one person and vote. First of all, Americans do not have a variety of choices. The two major parties have so many similarities, which narrows down the options that voters have. Additionally, this is an undemocratic system because a percentage of people will always feel marginalized by the system. This is evidenced by the fact that this system favors business interests more than popular participation. Constitutional guarantees, as well as voting rights, are negatively impacted. Voting rights are an essential human right that everyone deserves to have. It's also at the core of America's fiber and what the Founding Fathers envisioned all Americans to have. If people's voting rights are revoked or limited in any way, their voice and freedom of expression is taken away from them. As JFK said, "The rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened." Even though the Constitution is a big proponent of voting rights, the exercises of these freedoms are affected by today's two-party system. In the past, minority groups, poor white men, women, black Americans, and many others were not given this basic right. For example, at the time the Articles of Confederation were created, women had few property rights, and poor white men had more limited civil rights. It was not until many years later that poor white men were given their civil rights, and the campaign for women's suffrage became a success. Although the Constitution was revised in 1870 to include voting rights for all men, Southern state governments had laws that tried to prevent black Americans and some poor whites from voting. These laws required voters to pay a poll tax and pass literacy tests. Since freed slaves and poor white men were frequently illiterate, these laws were effective in restraining their voting rights. At last, in 1965, the United States outlawed those ludicrous stipulations. As George Washington feared, political parties were born and brought factional conflicts with them. The irony of it all was that these conflicts began shortly after Washington ended his presidency and gave his memorable farewell address. The tension between the two major parties began with the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, the first political parties. The Federalists, like Alexander Hamilton, believed in the power of the federal government, while the Anti-Federalists, like Thomas Jefferson, fought for the rights of states. Majority parties can only offer so much to its followers. On the other hand, third parties allow voters to have a diverse variety of opinions, choices, and candidates. Yet, they are often relegated, weakened, or marginalized by the two-party system's sheer dominance. Americans have grown so accustomed to voting for either a Republican or a Democrat that they cannot continue to do so even when they are not satisfied with those parties. Many voters who believe a third-party candidate is better qualified than the Democrat or Republican opponents are reluctant to waste their vote on someone with virtually no chance to win. Our two-party system has generated self-perpetuating laws and traditions. As a result, it is very difficult for a minority party to become a major influence. Nowhere in the official documents transcribed by the Founding Fathers is there mention of the influence of others. If they saw what type of system the American democracy is tolerating today, they would be extremely concerned. George Washington must be rolling over in his grave. Regrettably, besides the American government and citizens, Outside sources, such as businesses, have an enormous influence in political campaigns, contracts, and elections. Because the flow of the federal dollar is controlled by legislative and executive branch leaders, several industries, corporations, professions, and unions have representative interest groups to get a hand in the distribution of American dollars. In 1959, there were only 6,000 interest lobbying groups. That number has skyrocketed to 26,000 in 2019. So how did the influence of outside sources rapidly increase like that? Despite laws getting enacted and various other measures being implemented, these laws, or groups, rather, either found a loophole or were just plain lucky. Before, candidates were given large sums of money from the political parties, interest groups, and various outside sources. Campaign donations were limited in the 1970s with the use of soft money, which allowed people to donate a maximum amount of $1,000 to campaigns, while individual donors could donate an unlimited amount. The parties often used this soft money to help candidates by spending it on issue ads, voter registration, and Go TV drives. This was an ongoing process until 2002, when Congress passed the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act. That act, also known as the McCain-Feingold Bill, enacted a soft money ban. Nevertheless, this did not discourage political donors from achieving their goals. In 2010, the U.S. Supreme Court gave a huge legal victory to large companies with its ruling in Citizens United versus Federal Elections Committee. The court ruled that donations to support a candidate are a form of free speech, and that companies have the same rights to free speech as a person. That decision upset some Americans. They believe that the largest companies could spend more than individual citizens to influence an election. Unfortunately, the ruling increased the influence of political action committees, commonly referred to as PACs, on campaign financing. The ones who form PACs are business, labor, and other special interest groups. The purpose of these creations are to raise and give money to favored politicians and campaigns. As evidenced in the definition of a PAC, what increases their power even more is that they are a source of large donations. Because of this, politicians who receive PAC money will be willing to pass the PAC's desired laws, which widens the division between the two parties. Gun control, race, abortion on demand, fracking, climate change, immigration, school vouchers, health care. The list of issues that we are on one another's throats about seems to be endless. Who can use which bathroom is now a federal case. It's us versus them politics, and it's always the same us and always the same them. Even those who enjoy a spirited argument suffer from polarization fatigue. But there is no relief in sight. Democrats have spent the last 3 years trying to undo the 2016 election of Donald Trump, and they keep racing forward desperately to impeach him out of office rather than try to defeat him at the polls in 2020. Americans are highly polarized and have grown more so. We can blame politicians, big donors, activists, or the fake news media for this. But they are just intermediaries. They are not the main source of our polarization. We are. Since 1972, surveys have collected data on how Americans self-identify as liberal, moderate, or conservative. They determined just how polarized Americans are and how much more polarized we have become since the 1970s. About half of the public had chosen a side as a liberal or a conservative by 1972, and half considered themselves moderates. So the country always was somewhat polarized. By 2015, the split was 56 to 44%, with liberals and conservatives combining to outnumber moderates. A national shift of that size is highly significant. This shift seems even larger because ideologies now are more clearly reflected in the political parties. As late in the 1980s, there still were a fair number of liberal Republicans and conservative Democrats. Because the coalitions of both parties were so diverse, neither end of the spectrum was well represented. The parties, in effect, masked and muted the general public's polarization. As the parties realigned over several decades, liberals gravitated to the Democrats, and conservatives settled in with the GOP. That makes most parties much more dependent on their ideological wings for support in votes and contributions. The polarized perspectives of the public is now firmly embedded in the two major parties. None of this will change anytime soon. Even demographic shifts, the passing of generations, and the growing proportion of non-whites among U.S. voters is going to move the center line more than a little bit. It won't narrow the gap between ideological partisans. Still, conflict does not have to stay at a constant boil. The heat can be turned up or down by circumstance. In the past, Americans have been brought together by shared crises, as they were during the Great Depression and World War II, and briefly after 9/11, as well as by widely shared periods of prosperity, such as the Roaring Twenties and the Placid Fifties. Unfortunately, the polarization fires will be stoked in the months ahead by a contentious presidential campaign and an electorate filled with fear and loathing. Whoever survives these coming cage match elections should not expect a honeymoon period after the 2020 election. Further, members of the conservative side are beyond boiling. They've had it. Conservatives believe that the United States is a center-right nation that has been governed in recent decades from the center-left, or worse, the far-left. A Pew survey found that 81% of conservative Republicans felt they were on the losing side of important issues. Only 44% of liberal Democrats felt that way. It will be a long time before many conservatives again feel that they are being effectively represented by the system. Political experts had agreed that giving Americans, left, right, and center, what they had always wanted, peace and prosperity, would dial down the polarization in our country. But the Trump administration has delivered on his promises to give us peace and the greatest economic prosperity in modern times, and yet we are still at one another's throats. Clearly, our two-party system is working against us. What Trump has accomplished is amazing, considering that he has gotten us this far, despite major opposition to his every move from Democrats who value power over people. As a result of Democrat intransigence, three times as many Americans supported King George during the Revolutionary War than support our own Congress today. 84% of all Americans believe political leaders are more interested in protecting their power and privilege than doing what's right for the American people. Almost 80% believe that the Democrat and Republican parties are essentially useless in changing anything because both political parties are too beholden to special interests to create any meaningful change. 79% of Americans see the biased and slanted coverage of the media as part of the problem, and a whopping 74% believe our government is not only dysfunctional, but collapsing right before our eyes. When Democrats are in power, any success for the American people is bad for Republicans. And when Republicans are in power, any success for the American people is bad for Democrats. The enormous success of Trump's economy should be a source of jubilation for all Americans. But Democrats see that success as an impediment to regaining their power, and they spend all of their waking hours trying to destroy the president. The fact that it would destroy his economic gains is of little concern for a party that values their own power above all else. Had Democrats found a clear, impeachable offense against Trump, it would have caused conservatives to at least listen to their arguments. But instead, they denied the will of the people who elected Trump and began searching for a reason to impeach him. This after having mounted a coup attempt to prevent his election by the Obama administration, the Clinton campaign, the DNC, and Obama's intelligence community. First, it was Russian collusion. And when the Mueller report shot that down, it became obstruction of justice. When that failed, the desperate Democrats seized upon a telephone conversation between President Trump and the President of Ukraine. Trump had promised the American people that he would root out corruption wherever he found it. And clearly, the Ukraine was corrupt, and they were using American dollars for that corruption. The circumstances of former Vice President Joe Biden's conduct in the Ukraine and the multi-millions in dollars that flowed through to Biden's son, Hunter, came to light. And Trump asked the new president of Ukraine to investigate it while investigating the other corruption. That was a proper request. The fact that Joe Biden had decided to run for president does not make him above the law. Democrats, of course, circle the wagons to protect Biden rather than keeping the truth about the charges of corruption in the Ukraine from being found out. They simply don't want to know the truth. And worse, they don't want the public to know. But Joe Biden clearly engaged in corruption in the Ukraine when he, as Obama's vice president, demanded that Ukraine fire the prosecutor investigating the company that Hunter Biden was involved with. Or Biden said he would withhold American aid earmarked for Ukraine. Now that is a quid pro quo. Biden gave the Ukraine just 6 hours to complete this quid pro quo. There can be no clearer case of corruption, and Biden has admitted it all on video for the world to see. For Democrats to ignore Biden's conduct and then seek impeachment of the president for a quid pro quo that did not exist in his dealings with Ukraine is despicable and totally dishonest. George Washington reportedly said, "I cannot tell a lie." That would clearly disqualify Washington from being a Democrat today. Thank you for listening. I'll be back again this weekend, God willing. Same time, same station.